hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Love this song I'm singing, be warned. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. And you run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. But that's the name of this program here on lightresistanceradio.com. Well, here's something I've just put out on Twitter. And, it's, of course, it's not original with me. It's something that I received. And I do appreciate people sending me information from time to time. I always appreciate it. This is what I have... have put up there, and if we can just find it now, it's a famous prediction, or a warning, I guess you'd say, by Al Gore. Al Gore, of course, was the vice president for two terms under Bill Clinton, ran in 2000, came very close to winning, and then became at first global warming guru, and now that they've had to kind of retreat from that recognize that, maybe the Earth isn't actually warming up. They've kind of switched chains to Google. Climate change. Well, you can't, you probably can't lose on that. Climate is always changing. So climate change it is. Anyway, this is the quotation from Al Gore 10 years ago, 2009. The North Pole will be ice-free in the summer by 2013 because of man-made global warming. In other words, the North Pole will have melted. He predicted that. In 2009, and he said it would happen by 2013. Where are we now? Well, we're 6 years later. We're actually not 10 years after he made the prediction. And here's a picture of the North Pole. Nope, it's still cold. Well, yes, on some levels, anybody can be wrong. You can make a mistake. Your prediction can be incorrect, and so on. But I think you should be called on that. I don't think that that you should have a freebie, and people just walk away and say, "Oh well." So we listen to you tomorrow. I would say, when you make as wild and rash a prediction as that, that's verifiable. You know, that he said within 4 years, by 2013, the North Pole, the polar ice cap would have melted. And when, you know, 10 years after that, that prediction, the polar ice cap has not melted, then I think a person should be held responsible. That his credibility should be called into question. You know, when he makes yet another passionate prediction or a denunciation, and you know, the earth will, well, was it going to freeze up or burn up? Anyway, the earth is going to be destroyed if we don't stop using hydrocarbons. In other words, if we don't get away from gasoline and diesel, and so on. And I don't know, go back to what horse and buggy, but they're not even happy with bovine animals. Apparently a major source of methane in the atmosphere are cow farts. Well, what are you going to do about that? Well, kill them? I don't know. These people are factually wrong. They're nuts. And I think we are often too forgiving prone to go on and not hold them to account. Whereas I think they should be held to account. And when they predict a gain, this should be thrown back in their face and said, "Look, you got it wrong. What sort of prophet are you?" With all compassion in the world, yes, it's possible to get things wrong, of course. But what they've done is wrong, objectively wrong. Here's a very interesting op-ed piece by Peter Foster. Carbon disclosure goes up in flames. Last week, this would actually be a couple weeks ago. Let me see the date on this. No date. It's a couple weeks ago. California utility PG&E filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in the face of an estimated $30 billion of possible liabilities related to the disastrous California wildfires of 2017 and 2018. The climate crusaders of the mainstream media have been on Twitter with claims that PG&E represents, quote, the first climate bankruptcy. They're quite happy about that. It's not necessarily a good thing when a company goes bankrupt, but that's because PG&E's power lines are believed to have sparked fires in dry vegetation, and that dryness was the result of an extreme drought due to climate change. I mean, that's the argument. Brought about by fossil-fueled industrial society and greedy, feckless oil companies. It's a stretch, says Peter Foster. That the climate change is an existential threat to companies' health has been a growing theme of the UN-based climate industry. The PG&E collapse will likely ramp up the already intense demands by climate activists for companies to confess that their business models fail adequately to reflect climate risk. Indeed, PG&E has itself sought to blame climate change, that most nebulous and subversive of concepts, for its travails. But such a claim represents neither science nor policy guidance. It represents desperation. One of the most prominent promoters of the disclosure of emissions and climate programs is a London-based NGO, that's non-government organization, named CDP, previously Carbon Disclosure Project. But one problem with the climate disclosure project's credibility and the whole notion that confessing to contrived carbon crimes is as disclosure advocates claim, quote, just good business, is that now bankruptcy threatens PG&E as being the very model of climate concern. Yeah, it was a participant in this. The Climate Disclosure Project had dubbed it, quote, one of the leading companies in the world when it comes to openly sharing public information on greenhouse gas emissions reduction targets, and the implications of climate change for its business. Found a lot of good it has done them, says Peter Foster. CDP's latest rankings note that PG&E's climate score for 2018 is forthcoming due to methodological changes, according to a CDP spokesman. But the company's filing is available online. PG&E has a long history of taking action to combat climate change, so it says. Well, exactly how do you combat climate change? I don't mean to be a smart aleck, but frankly, I think the only thing you can really do would be to pray. That might do some good, but continuing. Perhaps they should have concentrated more on trimming dead trees near transmission lines, because allegedly it was a spark from one of their, transmission lines that ignited the timber, the just absolutely dry timber that may have led to at least one of the fires. CDP claims that, quote, by scoring businesses from A to D, we take organizations on a journey through disclosure to awareness, management, and finally to leadership. Unfortunately, PG&E found itself leading the way into burning forests, personal tragedy, and a potential conflagration of its balance sheet. PG&E ranked, quote, an A minus in 2017. If this disclosure ritual was meant to assure investors that PG&E was a sound investment, they were misled. Indeed, one wonders if a good lawyer might look at the whether CDP is itself subject to legal account action on that account. Meanwhile, the last thing that PG&E's stumble justifies is any redoubling of international climate conferences to conjure up more fake commitments. It is bordering on insanity to suggest that the way to deal with California wildfires is to force more solar panels on Burundi, windmills on Spain, or electric cars on China. One of the successes of the climate industry has been to conflate all natural disasters or extreme weather with climate change, which is now conventionally taken to mean catastrophic man-made climate change. However, the notion that PG&E represents some kind of corporate climate tipping point is absurd. Businesses without sufficient insurance have been driven into bankruptcy by natural disasters since the Great Flood. There's more, but I think that captures the essence of it. Well, you'll have noticed that the royal couple, Prince Harry and his mulatto wife, are expecting a baby, they've been what the English call twits, practically from the get-go. Perhaps you cannot be blamed for whom you want to marry, but certainly, I don't think it was a great day for the royal family when Prince Harry, who is not very close to the throne, but chose to marry Meghan Markle, who is a mulatto. She was, I believe, born a Catholic, become a Jew, is a divorcee, perhaps not exactly... let's say the right type of person Meghan Markle and Harry have announced that they're going to bring their child up gender neutral, and that the nursery will be in neutral colors. Traditionally, if it's a boy, it's kind of in blues and with little boy toys, and if it's a girl, it's in pink with little dolls and cuddly bears and so on. That's not to be. They're going to raise the child gender neutral, which frankly I think gives the child a good chance of being screwed up. If the child's not already genetically screwed up because of the parents, this really amounts to some form of child abuse. And in my opinion, that's really what it is. It is a form of child abuse. It buys into the utter raving nonsense that somehow we choose our sex. We don't. If you're biblically informed, you know that it was given to you at birth by God. And even if you're not biblically informed, you know from science that you are the same thing. You're gay. It's given to you by God. It's not a matter of your choice. I think I will become a boy. I'll be a boy. I don't know. On the other hand, I think maybe I'll be a girl. Sounds trite. That's just not the way it works. Nature defines who we are, and what this sadly does is sets the child up for confusion. Now, many children are quite healthy and may not be confused, but some will be. And just more of the vile parenting. Well, it's not just the ridiculous Windsors who are into this. I want to thank Dr. James Sanchez in Seattle for sending this my way. Dispelling myths, that's in quotation marks, about male female gender is the new goal for California kindergarten health classes. And there's a fetching little picture of some gap-toothed children. There's a girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, boy. Girl, can't tell what the Negro is. Probably a boy. I guess they're kindergarten children. They're all smiling. And so there's a white, two white kids, two boy, girl, an Oriental girl. Hard to tell. It might be Hispanic boy, white girl, blonde hair, and this Negro. Okay. The photo doesn't necessarily tell you much, but here's the story. The California Department of Education is asking parents to review its K-12 health curriculum framework, which seeks to radically transform the way public school students think about gender and sexuality. The written set of goals and objectives revamped in light of the state's new LGBT affirming sex education law, the Healthy Youth Act. So you affirm the tiny minority of, depending on your point of view, either immoral or unfortunate or screwed up, and perhaps all those adjectives apply to some degree. So the LGBT, they're going to affirm it. Well, why don't you affirm cancer? Cancer's a tragedy. Something we should try to avoid. Something we should try to find a cure for. But would we affirm it? Well, okay. Which was going to guide the curriculum development over the next decade. Yet children of Christian and other conservative-minded parents will find many of the new health lessons in conflict with the values taught at home. Parents have until Friday, January the 11th, to submit their comments. Now, yes, it's an affront to the, and I wouldn't just say Christian parents. The article uses the term conservative, but I would say scientifically based, commonsensical parents who recognize that gender is not a choice. It just isn't, and to the extent that we suggest it is. we are leading to the confusion. And you know, I think the Bible speaks pretty clearly about what should be done to people who confuse the young. Okay, dispelling myths about gender expectations in kindergarten can lay the groundwork for acceptance, inclusiveness, and an anti-bullying environment in schools, the proposed framework states. Gender nonconformity and physical characteristics are often at the root of many forms of bullying. So we're going to pretend the differences don't exist. Transitional kindergarten through grade three. So what are these myths about gender that even kindergartners must unlearn? Not just the color, toy, and activity preferences of the two sexes tend to be attracted to, but stereotypes that involve dress and body parts. The framework encourages teachers to read students books like My Princess Boy, about a boy who likes pink dresses, and to invite adults who identify as transgendered to the class as guest speakers. No, I don't want some freak addressing my 5-year-old grandson or daughter. When it comes to health lessons about body organs, the framework tells teachers to dispel the myth the male and female reproductive organs are different. No, this is voodoo. This is garbage. This is bullshit. It's a myth. The male and female reproductive organs are different. No, that is not only does the Bible tell us that that's false. Science tells us that's false. You know, the penis is the male reproductive organ. The uterus, the vagina, is the female reproductive organ. The breasts of male and female are different. The male breasts do not produce milk. The female breasts do, and with the purpose of nursing the young. This is utterly wrong. This is lies. This is far worse than if the school taught that the earth had been created by Ooga Booga, who lived up on a mountain, and it, you know, fee, fi, fo, fum, roamed the earth looking for little children to eat and mangle. That's of course would be untrue and misleading and unfair. But by gosh, this is utterly, insanely wrong. The framework says when providing instructions on sexual and reproductive organs, teachers can introduce the concept that gender does not always match the sexual and reproductive organs described. Okay, so you have a penis but you think you're a girl, and you have a vagina but you think you're a boy. Well, no, if I happen to think I'm Napoleon, doesn't mean I'm right, and sure doesn't mean that you have to call me emperor. For example, teachers may share, in the classroom, we may use the term female reproductive organs, but some people who identify as male have these organs. The actual anatomical name for organs is utilized. Other lessons. While these new gender lessons start in kindergarten, they're reinforced in every grade. The entire proposed K-12 health curriculum framework consists of 9 chapters with various appendices. It includes 842 mentions of the word sex, sexual, and sexuality, 239 mentions of gender, and just 2 mentions of abstinence. It's in its entire 1,000-page health framework. This is for elementary schools. I'm sorry, it's actually K-12, but you wonder. Whose time is taken up writing this stuff and writing to produce such nonsense? Although Christian parents could find many objections within this framework, listed below are some of the most objectionable sections. The framework recommends a K-3 book on gender identity entitled Who Are You?, which introduces kids to the gender spectrum. According to the lesson plan for the book, kids get to work the 3 layers of the gender wheel and learn how grown-ups look at a baby's body when they are born and make a guess. That this is the sexist side at birth, male or female. Sometimes people get this confused with gender. But gender is much more than the body you were born with. That's what it teaches. No, parents, and I've done this because I've had children. When the child is born, the mother and I did not look at the child and say, boy. Well, what if we disagree? She says, girl, I say boy. No, come on. You'll look at the, is there a little penis there or is there a vagina? Come on. This is not rocket science. Okay, well, another objectionable thing. The framework introduces high school children to the dangers of spiritual abuse. Listing among other types of abuse, emotional, sexual, physical, teens must avoid. Spiritual abuse. Well, the physical abuse is pretty different from spiritual. Examples of religious abuse include forcing others to adhere to rigid gender codes, not allowing a partner to do things they enjoy. Aha! Uh-huh. So, you know, if you have a moral point of view and say it's wrong to have, maybe perhaps to be crude about it, have sex with a goat, then you're spiritually abusing the person. Or if you tell the person that, the young person, that abstinence until marriage or until, let's say, a committed relationship is the best way to go, well, that's spiritual abuse. Another thing that would be quite objectionable, the framework tells middle school teachers to use gender-neutral language for romantic relationships and to eliminate words that imply they have only one sex partner at a time. Wow! So, apparently, promoting just outright wholesale promiscuity. Quote, in order to be inclusive, the term partner should be used in place of or in addition to boyfriend-girlfriend or husband-wife to avoid assumptions about gender and sexual orientation. Some students may be non-monogamous, and the term partner may also be used to be more inclusive. Some students may be non-monogamous. Well, we're going up to grade 12. Okay, I guess that's about 18. We're talking the whole spectrum of students. You mean a student in grade 5 may be non-monogamous? A student in grade 5 is presumably not even having sex yet. This is cuckoo land. And why must they use the neutral term partner, my partner? I hear this, you know, quite a bit from adults, even adults near my own age. And they speak about my partner. And I always immediately have question mark in my head when I hear that. Well, your partner. Now, I assume you don't mean your business partner. I mean, if you don't know the person, that is a possible misinterpretation or interpretation. You know, here's my partner. If they're two men, I might assume that they're in business together, as in business partners, and that may in fact be the case. When a man or a woman refers to their partner, and I happen to know they're heterosexual, I wonder, well, why would you not say my husband or wife, as the case might be, if they're common law, then my boyfriend or my girlfriend, or if you really want to tell me all the details, yeah, my common law boyfriend or girlfriend. But partner, what does that mean? Okay. Another thing that I find objectionable. The framework introduces high school students to sexual terms such as polysexual, pansexual, and asexual. You know, maybe I should go back to school. Of those three, I'm only certain I know what one means. Asexual means, you know, not having any sexual desires. Polysexual and pansexual. The framework encourages middle school teachers to invite abortion providers as class speakers. Guest speakers from your local health department, sexual health clinic, or local nonprofit organization such as Planned Parenthood, which is a vicious anti-life lobby, may have well-informed sexual health educators and age-appropriate material to support comprehensive sexual health education. Well, what about a speaker from the local Right to Life group, which would inform the students of the health risks? Yeah, there are health risks of abortion, and the desirability of not going that route. They say whatever nuttiness there is starts in California, and I don't think that that's far off the mark. I want to thank Bachman Yazdanfar, who is a good friend of mine. We're big backers of Your War News, for sending this my way. I'm not sure I really want to thank him. It's disgusting. It's insane. Remember, Michelle Obama said, "When they go low, we go high." Well, here's proof. He means that tongue in cheek. This is a short clip, and I won't really play most of it for you because it's visual. All you just hear is noise. Deranged liberals, and what it is that somebody got the bright idea that they would gather around Donald Trump's Hollywood star, and these are liberal men wearing MAGA hats. That's Make America Great Again. Okay, sounds okay. Well, no. They're being held by radical feminists holding leashes around their necks, and they're acting like dogs. They're wearing Make America Great Again hats and are barking like dogs and crawling around the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame for Donald Trump. Yeah, that's them barking. Grown men on leashes held by radical feminists. You struggle to find a way to describe this that would suggest anything other than mental illness. And I'm afraid I'm not up to that. It really is mentally ill. There's a further scandal about Michael Jackson. His was not my type of music, so okay, I'm not the most sympathetic person. And of course, he transformed himself from a Afro-haired, very dark Negro into a pale-skinned, straightened-haired individual. And whatever you think of his music, he seemed to have a penchant for little boys. And but I remember when he died, I was actually in Jackson, not Michael Jackson, but Jackson, Mississippi, for a meeting of the Council of Conservative Citizens. And that was the news that morning when I turned on my TV set in the hotel. It was Michael Jackson had died suddenly and blah, blah, blah. I wasn't particularly interested. That the headline told me all I needed to know, so I switched channels. Let's say it was ABC. I go to NBC. Same story. CBS, same story. I think I got CNN in those days. Same story. It wasn't until I got to Bloomberg, which is basically financial news, that I could get anything other than Michael Jackson's death. And it went on hour after hour. Anyway, I always thought there was far too much of a fuss made about it. Well, here's a story that's just been a video made about this, and there's several people who are now adults have come out of the woodwork to say that things were not all well. Michael Jackson was raping those children night after night. Jackson was known to routinely take children into his bed, but no one did anything for years. When he was finally tried for assaulting young boys, the celebrity effect almost certainly saved him. That is, the jury refused to convict him because of who he was. It was also true that Jackson had made large payments to other families who claimed Jackson had molested their children. The judge at Jackson's trial refused to allow these facts into prosecution evidence, so he was given a sweetheart treatment. This is a story from the Telegraph, Leaving Neverland. the director, Dan Reed. Jackson was raping these children night after night. There's a picture of Michael Jackson with Wade Robson in the hat and his family in 1990. And there's some people feel that some of these kids were actually almost pimped out by their parents. Shocking revelations of alleged child abuse by Michael Jackson air in Britain this week. Chris Harvey talks to the director behind it. "We're going to have to reevaluate the way we see Michael Jackson," said Dan Reed, the director of the forthcoming Channel 4 documentary Leaving Neverland. The lie that Jackson perpetrated while he was alive, that he was a great defender and supporter of children, and the ferocity with which his business associates and his family have defended him, mean that his fall would be that much harder. In fact, there are already radio stations that are pulling his music. Quote, "People will have to listen to his music in the knowledge that he was a prolific child rapist. If they're comfortable doing that, fine. If they're not, well, maybe perhaps listen to something else for a while." We're in the 54-year-old production office in central London. Reed's five BAFTAs for an award in Britain for hard-hitting films such as Terror in Bombay, 2009, Battle for Haiti, 2011, these are documentaries he made, are sitting on the windowsill. A handwritten letter on pink paper from an outraged Michael Jackson fan is pinned to the wall. Quote, "Leave the king of pop, Michael Jackson, be," it reads. Quote, "These so-called victims have already testified that Michael never did anything to them. Now they decide to flap their gums to spew out lies." Ever since Leaving Neverland first aired at the Sundance Film Festival in Utah back in January of this year, January 25th, amid a large police presence, the documentary has stirred up strong emotions. Fans from as far afield as China, Taiwan, and Singapore have subjected Reed to a torrent of really horrible, vicious abuse via email and social media, wishing him dead and saying disgusting things they want to do to me without knowing me, without even having seen the film, thinking it's going to do Michael Jackson some good if they hurl abuse at me, the documentary director says. The singer's family too, his brothers Jermaine, Jackie, Marlon, and Tito, with whom he performed as the Jackson 5, have produced the film, insisting Jackson's slumber parties were with young boys were innocent. Jackson's estate has also launched $100 million lawsuit against HBO, which was due to air the first part of the documentary earlier this week. Over the course of 4 hours and two interviews with two men, 40-year-old James Safechuck and 36-year-old Wade Robson and their families, Leaving Neverland details graphic sexual abuse of these people suffered as children. Safechuck was around 9 when he appeared alongside Jackson in a 1987 Pepsi advert, after which the singer befriended him and his family, inviting them to his Neverland ranch in California and taking the boy on tour. Robson, who would later become Britney Spears' choreographer, met Jackson as a 5-year-old in Brisbane, Australia in late 1987 after winning a dance contest for the Bad Tour. first prize was to be his idol. The next night, Jackson brought Robson onto stage to dance with him. The boy was starstruck, but would not become a part of Jackson's life until 2 years later, when his mother moved to America. Robson says Jackson abused him for the next 7 years. Safechuck, meanwhile, describes all the places in Neverland where he says Jackson had sex with him. He even produces a wedding ring from a mock ceremony in which Jackson told him they were married. His hands shake as he takes it from the box. And here's a picture of Michael Jackson with now more or less straightened hair, red lipstick, fairly white skin, and this poor child, Robson. Just disgusting. And, you know, as so often happens with political correctitude, much of this was actively covered up during Jackson's life. I mean, there were accusations, but he was powerful enough to have them quashed. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I'm going to start it tonight with a a song by Amber Digby, country western singer from Texas, and this is called "The World You're Living In."
You say. Just ain't right. It's true, she's there waiting and wondering, there's no doubt.
But she's the one you live with, and you're the one I can't live without. She's the one you live with,
you're the one I can't live without.
Amber Digby, you're the one, the world you're living in. Here's another one by Amber, and it's called She's Already Won Your Heart. These are some good old hurting songs. And no, I'm not a Michael Jackson fan, I'm sorry.
Into
Hamburg Digby, and I'm going to play another one by Amber, and hope you all like it. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. This is Amber Digby. One more thing I wish I'd said. One more thing I wish I'd said.
Thank you.
That was Amber Digby. You got to go play another one by Amber. And this is with Vince Gill, the one I can't live without.
Just ain't right. It's true, she's there waiting and wondering, there's no doubt. But she's the one you live with, and you're the one I can't live without. She's the one you live with, you're the one I can't live without.
Digby and Vince Gill. Go play one more. This one is this is by we missed that one. I don't want to play that one tonight. This is We're the Kind of People That Make the Jukebox. So please Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here made to wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.